Hi, this is Alexander Rossi, 2008 Formula BMW, America's and World Final Champion, and you're listening to F1Weekly.com.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
Our subscribers and members of our listening audience.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Favre, my co-host. Nasser Hamid is on assignment. This is podcast number 324, January 15th, 2009. Steven?
This F1 Weekly Podcast brought to you by the all-new 2009 Motorsports Memories, powered by Turbo Calendar, a pictorial tribute to the age and rage of the Turbo era. Incredible images in large format, such as Michele Alboreto in the Austrian Grand Prix, Gilles Villeneuve in his home Grand Prix in Montreal, and Ricardo Patrese in Rio. Get it now on our merchandise page. You know you want to.
Thank you, Stephen, and of course we thank Motorsports Memories. On today's program, the new Ferrari F60, no buyers yet for Honda F1, Renault's R29 fails the crash test, and of course, the guru, the king of Karachi, Mr. Nasser Hamid, having a fantastic time on his assignment with, we know who, Mr. Ye himself, and of course, he's met the good Dr. Mark and some outstanding photographs of what our wonderful Nasser is doing on the other side of the pond. Great stuff. Boy, Nasser is having a great time, and I'm sure a lot of people are jealous, but we'll get the full report. I like the picture of him at the Autosport show talking to Mr. Brundle, who will be soon at the BBC, and I'm sure his interview is going to be outstanding, as the other ones will be, including Tony Brooks. I mean, we are getting spoiled, but enough of Nasser, because he's working and not goofing off, and I may be doing the latter. So there you have it, the new Ferrari F60 commemorating 60 years of Grand Prix racing. When they said F60, I thought the new version of the F50 was coming out, but sure enough, it's not the F2009. It's the F2. It's the F60, and it's going to take some time getting used to these smaller, weirder looking cars.
Yeah, the first time I saw the image, I'm like going GP2 or almost A1 GP ish,
F3 maybe.
Yeah, just small, really simple lines. No weird stuff like we've been seeing the last couple of years with the extra nicks and knacks for aero, and just kind of a very vanilla almost car.
It's small. It's out of balance. It doesn't please the eye. The big front wing, the small rear wing, the whole thing.
And then the nose is long and narrow, and then basically kind of hangs that wing off, that huge wing off of it. It's really not...
It's not a very well-balanced look.
Yeah, not aesthetically pleasing.
Well, I think there's going to be some tweaks as they discover the wing's too wide. Everybody's going to be banging into each other. And safety issues might come up in the first few races. And I think some of these rules are going to be toned down and give the teams a little more flexibility. But right now, it's a pretty strange-looking beast.
Yeah, definitely not what we've seen, not what we're used to seeing. Even going back 10, 15 years, it's still kind of weird.
So the next Formula One car to come out will be the Toyota, online this Thursday, I believe. And the website's out there, tf109-presentation.com or something like that. You could see it on GrandPrixUpdate.com. They have the link there, but that's going to be interesting. But I have a funny feeling these cars are all going to look fairly similar now because everybody just took the rule book, threw it on the ground with a tape measure, and figured it all out.
Yeah, well, pretty not a whole lot of wiggle room within the new rules to kind of differentiate yourself in any way. You might be able to tweak the way that front wing looks and maybe the number of canards or the way it's set up. And then the back wing, you might be able to play a little bit with the way that sets up. But it's pretty much, it's going to be that wide, and it's going to be that wide. And that nose is going to look funky, kind of, long and thin. Should be interesting. I'm waiting to see how they perform on the track. Let's put it that way. Let's see
if
it improves the racing at all.
And Felipe Massa said that it was a completely different feel. And he seemed to be a little taken aback on how it drove, how it looked. And how small it was. He even thought it looked F3-ish.
Yeah. This was getting way. I used to drive a big car.
And, when just a few years ago we had V10s, it was screaming, it was macho. I don't know. I don't know if I'm a big fan of 2009. Of course, if the racing is good, most of that criticism goes out the window.
Yeah. So. When they're sitting parked, they look slow in. We'll see how it works out once we get them on the track.
Yeah, exactly. I can't wait for the Renault. That will probably be the best-looking car, as usual. Thank you very much.
Even if it looks just like the other ones. We should have the right colors.
And Renault failing the crash test is actually good luck for us. Because in 2005, they failed the crash test.
Went on to win the championship.
And they went on to win the championship, which was marvelous, and bravo. So that I was happy to hear that.
Do you know what portion of the craft chest they failed?
It was a side impact, I believe.
Okay, so probably just need to reinforce the side putt.
Yeah, and what's going on is that it's sort of good news because it means they're working right to the very edge of the limit,
right?
Because of the amount of weight that's been added with the kinetic energy recovery system.
Gotta make up for that battery pack.
Exactly. And of course, Ferrari's continuing to pound on the KERS issues in terms of cost cutting.
It's not
why
safe.
Are we doing
why
this?
It's too expensive. It's not safe. It's too expensive. Why are we doing this? And I tend to agree with them on if we're trying to lower the costs in Formula One, why are we trying to bring on a new technology that is pretty much from scratch?
Not only that, but we're banning testing. So how do you develop the new technology without the testing?
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be pretty bizarre. I think the timing, and a lot of this wasn't thought out thoroughly.
Well, I think KERS was kind of one of Max's pet projects.
Well.
And so therefore, he rammed it down their throats. It sounds kind of neat, kind of nice. Ooh, some technology. Well, they've got to throw some technology at the car because they've fallen back to an F3 car, size-wise and technology-wise, it's no more complex than a GP2. So they've got to do something to kind of hold that technology cutting edge that Formula One is really supposed to be about.
Exactly. And even though we know Ferrari has a lot of power, the FIA conspiracy and all that, and they've been critical on the KERS, BMW is, on the other hand, because I think they're ahead in development, is so pro-KERS now that Ferrari is not happy with BMW's stance. I think Ferrari was hoping to get the whole group from...
Well, they were hoping that more people would be having trouble with it. I know the McLaren, I think, has theirs pretty well lined up. As you said, BMW seems to have gotten their bugs out and are probably pretty happy with what they've got. I haven't heard much from Toyota or Renault, the two other major...
Toyota's having trouble. Renault has told... Because Red Bull was trying to design their own KERS system and gave up and signed a deal with Renault that Renault will just supply it as well.
As part of the engine package.
Exactly. And some of the Autosports photographs I saw online, Williams had theirs on display. Now, there wasn't much of a display because it looked like this conical thing with lots of machined holes and polished billet aluminum. Which somebody like me who thinks, wow, that's very cool. You can appreciate some of the turning and the machining and the lathe work that was involved.
Exactly.
Whether it works, I haven't a clue.
That was a really nice piece of machinery.
It's exactly. Like,
but what does it do?
Exactly. You know, I'm looking at this, I'm going, wow, it looks really cool. But on the other hand, is it a ruse by Williams, you know, at the...
Is it just a really nice piece of machine art?
Yeah, exactly. It has no function whatsoever. But at least they were out there showing something.
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty weird stuff. But in the end,
a bitchin' paperweight.
In the end, we know what's going to happen. Some teams are going to have it, and some teams are not going to have it. And some teams also were talking about they're going to have a K button on the steering wheel. Now, some people are telling me it's not really a push-to-pass thing, but it's some kind of power boost where that energy is brought back to the forefront of the car to be used for some kind of advantage.
Yeah, I wonder if it could provide some sort of supercharging or... Because I know you're not going to be putting an electric motor on the car. You're not going to take the weight penalty.
Well, there is a dynamo involved with the KERS. You know, I mean, that electrical charge has to be transmitted and stored in some way. Now, I heard that Williams is going to go with, which I thought was archaic and sort of heavy, the big flywheel.
Well, it's probably a simple concept. Maybe what they can do.
Well, the flywheel.
Maybe what the K button will actually do is, if you're coming up to pass some guy, you can zap him.
Yeah, yeah,
He loses power.
That's what it is. It zaps the guy in front of you, and he just goes off into a big billow of smoke.
Rolls off to the side.
That's fascinating. But we'll see what happens. Let's go right to Honda. No buyers yet. I thought by now they needed to have something in the bag. Now Nick Fry is saying he is going to take over. And then, of course, they had the Greek, I believe, billionaire very interested.
Yeah, lots of talk. Not a whole lot of action. You know, Nick Fry throwing his hat in the ring, pissed a bunch of people off.
Exactly.
But, where's he going to get the money? It's not like he's got the kind of cash you would need to buy up a Honda sitting in his bank account, and I'm sure that he's, you know, that would mean he's having to drag up sponsors, and sponsors are few and far between right now with the kind of cash that you would need to run an F1 team.
Well, the worst part about it is, for a number of weeks now, we've been led to believe that Ross Brawn and his relationship with Ferrari would, in the end, cough up some Ferrari motors, just from their good heart.
Yeah, but I can't see Ferrari giving him motors. Selling him at, you know, at cost.
No,
maybe,
of course, for, you know, a reasonable sum. But apparently Ferrari has gone out on the record and saying, there is no deal, we're not going to be supplying Honda with Ferrari engines. Now, I was under the impression right after Honda announced they were pulling, Ross Brawn, you know, pulled everybody together, and he had some of the engineers already start work on reassigning the chassis
to take the Ferrari powertrain.
And now, no Ferrari. And, of course, now they talked to Nürburgring Hogg, who said, well, we might be able to help. Everybody's trying to be friendly here because it's really...
Well, they both Ferrari and McLaren have a reason to be friendly because there's talk that they're going to have to pony up the cars to fill the grid by running a third car at the races.
Yeah, but those teams can afford it. The extra sponsorship.
Well, not only that, but the advantage to them and the fact that that's one more car they get to test with.
Well, yeah, exactly. And I'm sure, I think, I would be furious if I was a Williams or anybody else if that happened.
Well, Renault or Toyota, you know, the two other remaining works teams, I would be pissed because, hey, well, I'm going to run a third car.
Exactly, especially without the testing we're going to have this season. I don't know, but I don't see Mercedes providing these guys motors. I think Norbert Hogg, he left a big open door by saying they would have to have 100% financial backing. In this day and age, nobody has that.
Not really. None of the independents truly have that kind of money. There really aren't any independents save Williams on the grid at the moment. Should be interesting because the other thing that you got to look at too is just that now all four of the remaining manufacturers are already supplying engines to other teams. And in the case, as Ferrari. I guess Ferrari's only down to one customer being Toro Rosso.
Correct.
But who's going to pony up the, you know, what happened to Max's inexpensive Cosworth engines?
I don't know. That sort of faded away a little bit. I'm not sure what's going on with that, but I think because the FOTA group really pounded him about, you know, this.
Yeah, basically, take your standardized engine and go pound sand with it.
Yeah, exactly. They didn't like that idea, and that's pretty normal thinking. I mean, a Ferrari.
We've already turned our cars into, you know, basically spec vehicles.
Well, we'll see what happens. I think things are going to change a little bit through the season. But my biggest concern is, you know, a lot of people are talking about how this is going to mix up the grid. You know, all of a sudden, this is the new era in Formula One. But when you look at the teams that have the resources to revamp and come up with a whole new car per the FIA rules and regulations for 2009, it's going to be the same teams that were winning last year.
Well, I can see.
I think Renault
maybe pulling Ferrari and McLaren back a little bit. So maybe not quite running away with it.
But BMW and Renault.
You're still going to, the top four is still going to be the top four.
Yep.
I can't see it really pulling the rest of the field back. The only team that may be able to step up a little bit and maybe break the top four more consistently might be Red Bull because, one, the cars kind of level out the field. But, two, they're probably getting one of the top three drivers on the grid right now in their car. Mm-hmm. It's Sebastian Vettel.
Vettel.
Yeah, so that's the only thing. That's really the only parameter that can really move one of the independents up is their driver. I don't think anybody's going to be able to put that much better a car together, even with the new rules. It's going to, you know, because, you know, McLaren, Ferrari, Renault, and BMW are going to be able to squeeze every bit of, you know, every tenth out of the car that they can get technologically, which most of the other teams in the grid can't do because they don't have the resources to do it.
I agree. And I think the surprise this season would be no surprise at all. That's just my thoughts on that. Let's quickly go to this new 8 engines during the season rule. I thought that was interesting. Now, no penalty. They have 8 engines for the season, and they could sort of work around, you know, if they have a kablamo, there's no penalty if you change it, but then you're down. It's like having 9 lives. I found that interesting.
So does that mean if you use up your 8, you're done for the season?
Exactly. That's what's so funny. And let's roll.
So what does that mean? That means we get to Brazil and we've got 10 cars on the grid because, you know, half the teams have used up their 8 engines?
Exactly. It's going to be 1 engine per 2 races, sort of, but it's been extended to include a 3rd race per single V8. But not entirely. Each driver may use no more than 8 engines during a championship season. Should a driver use more than 8 engines, he will drop 10 places on the starting grid at any event during which an additional engine is used.
So does that mean if he uses the ninth motor twice, he gets nailed for 10 grids every time he uses the ninth motor, or just the first time he uses the ninth motor?
As long as he hasn't used up his 8 engine allotment, and he's managing that 8 engine, there are no penalties.
I like
this better. I don't like the penalties for engine problems because we're supposed to be watching a race.
Well, the other thing too is that, okay, what constitutes the engine? Because you run 2 races on it, you can send it back to the factory and refurb it.
Well, not only that, but you do not need to use the engines consecutively, 2 races in a row. You could use one, then go to another, and then put that one somewhere, and then bring it back.
Yeah, so basically long cycle them instead of short cycling them.
Well, it depends. You know, I think this is going to be able to. It's going to be risk management for some of the more arduous power circuits like Monza and Spa-Francorchamps.
Yeah. So in other words, you basically put a new motor in for that one, and then if you're running something easy,
then you throw in the secondhand one.
But not only that, but I think I'd be curious to know what constitutes the engine. How many of those components can you cycle out?
I think.
You know, can you basically strip it down to the block and then build it back up again?
No, I think the heads have to stay on. Cylinder heads have to stay on. Valves, all that can't be changed. But I think you have to change your header exhaust system because after one race, it's brutal.
Not only that, but they also typically tune the exhausts to the circuits.
Correct. So I think it's the exhaust and possibly the intake that can be changed.
But you could probably go back through it and swap out all the seals and clean up the valve. That would be an interesting thing to find out.
Maybe somebody who knows out there could give us an email. That's a good question. There's a lot of good stuff out there. We could go to the FIA website and download that huge book.
And see if it actually says what you can do. Because it makes sense. If you're going to run 8 for a season, it would be cool if you could take it back to the shop and basically replace a lot of the smaller wear components and just keep the main parts together.
Exactly. Now, the key to this, is to have the viewer, the fan, aware of what engine they're on.
Yeah, definitely. So, maybe put a little sticker on the side of the car that says, a one or two, or something.
Some teams might not want to divulge that, but I think usually most teams know what's going on from one team to the next. But no, I want a little stat on the screen while I'm watching the race. You know which
or at the start of the race when you run down the grid, you basically say what the engine that Jenson Button is using this week is on its third race. You're kind of keeping an eye on him a little closer, looking for
correct
him to start smoking.
And if there's a kablamo, you know why. And if there isn't, you're going, engines are lasting a long time.
Pretty nice engine.
And dependability has come a long way in Formula One. There's no...
Well, especially the standardized engine, I think, is a lot for that. Is that, when you've built the same motor so many times, it usually gets better.
It does. So there you have it. Can't wait for the new TF-109. And, of course, they have a website just for that presentation, TF-109-presentation.com. And that's going to be exciting. And, of course, Nasser on assignment, getting the goodies, not for me, but for the listeners.
For you listeners out there.
So we've got some great podcasts to look forward to in the upcoming weeks. So we're going to take a quick break. I'm going to come back with no Motorsports Mondial because I would never even dare to fill those shoes. So I'll have a quick Dakar rally update. And then we'll go into the wrap-up. So we'll be back after this brief message.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And no, there is no globe spinning because Nasser is getting...
Because he's on the other side of the globe.
Well, not only that, he's out in the field.
We wouldn't want him to fly off into space.
He's out in the field and he's getting really the meat and potatoes of motorsports. So I'm not even going to try. I went and got a quick update on today's stage. Carlos Sainz moved another step closer to victory in the Dakar rally after scoring his fourth consecutive stage win on the 10th day of the event. The former World Rally Champion has now won 6 of the 10 stages that has taken place so far. The win was also the 15th for the Spaniard in the Dakar rally. Of course, the Volkswagen team as a whole is doing really wonderful. All three Volkswagens, Sainz, Miller, and De Villiers, are in the lead. But, of course, Robbie Gordon...
I think it's a monster Hummer.
He's running a Hummer, which is a General Motors product, Chevrolet, what have you. Is doing really good, right behind the Volkswagens, and only 20 seconds behind today. And, of course, one of Robbie Gordon's big fans is the king himself, Mr. Nasser Hamid. So... Gordon said it was a good day, pretty much flawless run. We got by Mark Miller around CP2. I was a little conservative in the bumps, but we lost by 20 seconds. So it was very, very close. Volkswagen's Mark Miller was third. 7 minutes behind Sainz, who is now over 27 ahead of the American. Second in overall standings with four stages to go. Miller said, we struggled with the navigation all morning, and when you're struggling, the rhythm is very difficult to maintain. So there you have it. A puncture hit. Gignel caught him out for a difficult day. And, of course, we did have a little tragedy, and these things happened. Spaniard rider Cristobal Guerrero was left in a coma following a crash at 160 kilometers an hour. The Spaniard had to be airlifted to the hospital in Copiapo, where a CT scan was carried out, but I have no updates on his medical situation. So we'll see what, our prayers are with him and his family. I hope he makes it, but there you have it. We have no forum updates either.
Yay's, chauffeuring NASA around the continent.
Exactly. Yay is basically NASA's chauffeur. And of course, this means NASA has stepped up. Instead of a Camry, he's now in a Lexus. So there you have it. Real quickly, the wrap-up. It's been a great, great, great week watching those pictures flood the forum from Yay. He's doing the best he can, but they're going out to dinner, and what's funny is you're getting comments saying, Yay and Dr. Mark watching the guru doing the interviews, because it's great stuff. He has the questions. He's so prepared, and the questions are so wonderful and dynamic that...
And he's usually got something that kind of catches the interviewee off guard, because...
Personal touches.
They're so used to, the canned interviews with media. They get Nasser, who knows their history, and can go back and ask them a question about an incident that happened, 10, 15 years ago, and they're like, huh?
Oh, yeah. And that's why Nasser is the bomb when it comes to interviewees. He uses buzzwords, drops names like the guy's mom. He'll know her first name, where he was born, what 7-Eleven he went to when he was 10 years old.
The name of his race engineer.
That's why he gets the great interviews. And I think he's going to go far, especially now that he's writing for motorsport.com. But there you have it. So real quickly, Motorsports Memories 2009, powered by Turbo Calendar, is going fast. I think we have...
a dozen or so left.
Exactly. $15.95 plus shipping and handling. Just go to the merchandise page and press the click I want it now button. But if you don't have a PayPal account and you don't want to deal with that, just email Nasser. He'll send you the calendar, and then...
you can mail him a check.
He'll bill you. We use the honor system here because we are all very honest people. Marin Karting is proud to organize and support the 2009 Jim Russell Northern California Rotax Challenge. Marin Karting offers CRG carts, engines, and parts for all the carts, engine service, driver coaching, and track side support to Northern California carters. For more information, contact Marin Karting at www.marincarting.com, or you can give them a ring at 415-898-0999. I want to mention our MySpace site and Facebook. Apparently, MySpace is sort of fading away, isn't it, Stephen?
More towards a younger generation. Facebook seems to be taking over because
it's more for the sophisticated and intellectual.
A little bit more broader. The age range is a little more professional than Facebook.
MySpace. MySpace is for juvenile delinquents.
Yes, exactly.
And hooligans. Exactly, I agree. But anyway, MySpace, Facebook sites, just do a search for F1 Weekly and add us as a friend. And you can search for all of us by name. Clark, Steve, David, blah, 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 blah. If you'd like to advertise across from with our website or podcast, email us at info@F1Weekly.com. I want to thank everybody who makes this show possible, and I want to thank Yay for being a member of the F1 Weekly team temporarily while he's hosting Nasser in England, and of course, they're going to go through the channel, and they're going to go to France, they're going to go to Reims, They're going to go to Dijon Prenois. He's off. He's back again. That's incredible.
I think Nasser even has an appointment in Switzerland.
Yes, so keep up the good work. Yay. I want to thank Toby Dawes, Caton Designs, Desiree, Steve Fobb, and of course the executive producer, Mr. David Tapia. Thanks, everyone, and good night.
Good night.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, recording and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.